Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome, my listeners, to Tun Freedom Islam International. We welcome you once again to the program, the car program. It's much happening around the globe while we're waiting for Abdul Hakatola to join us on the line. Yes, Maulana Waja spoke about the Egyptian crash. What is happening is more wreckage has been found north of Alexandria. And the latest is that they found they retrieved more plane wreckage. Also some of the passengers' belongings, they found some body parts, they found luggage and also plane seats. And I think the search was now continuing to locate and see, you know, where the rest of the plane and the black boxes are to determine exactly what happened. Regarding the sea listeners, to remind you, the plane disappeared over the Mediterranean with approximately 66 people on board early on Thursday. And regarding this, we find that the search intensified today. But Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, the tragedy raised fears of a repeat of the bombing of a Russian passenger jet by ISIS, you know, which killed over 200 and somewhat people. The plane disappeared between the Greek islands and the Egyptian coast without a distress signal, you know, from its crew. So now what's going to happen to listeners? And, you know, I think what they say is basically they have all the details up to the fatal event. So if anything happened in the cockpit, it is likely that they will hear it on the voice recorder. And at this point in time, they're not sure with regards to what the cause of the crash is. So Allah Adam will keep our eyes on that story. Also regarding Sri Lanka, listeners, you know, it's quite sad. We've seen some images coming from Sri Lanka. You know, desperate Sri Lankans clambered onto rubber dinghies, makeshifts, boats today to escape the monster floods in the capital, Colombo, as officials said that approximately 500,000 people had fled their homes across the island. Yes, it's been the heaviest rains in a quarter of a century that has pounded Sri Lanka since last weekend. You know, the result has actually triggered lots and lots of, you know, huge landslides that has buried many, many victims in up to approximately, you know, 15 meters of mud. So to date, we find that more than about 60 people known to have passed away so far, amidst the fears that the number could, you know, actually spike with many more reported missing. And, you know, assistance is being given to them. But again, dear listeners, we find that approximately 200,000 people have been moved from the low-lying capital, which has a population of approximately 650,000. And regarding this, we find that basically at this point in time, you know, there is no realistic hope of finding any survivors in landslides that buried two villages in up to approximately 15 to 20 meters of mud. Imagine entire villages being buried, listeners, up to 20 meters of mud. Allah make it easy, inshallah. Ameen. Alright, we'd like to welcome Abdul Haq Katrana. We do have him on the line. Abdul Haq, my brother, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to you.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh to all our listeners out there. Jazakumullahu khairan once again for tuning in. Alhamdulillah, Allah Ta'ala made it possible that I could join you guys today, because unfortunately immediately after work I had to do a bit of running around. One was to go and attend the accident, and unfortunately, you know, it is once again the youngsters don't know what speed to drive at, in which areas and how to drive. And yeah, with the speeding, it was rather unfortunate. He was transporting a couple of kids in the car, and yeah, the kids are a little bit on the hurt side. Alhamdulillah, nothing serious. But the little youngster's got, you know, a dumpy on his head about the size of a baseball. So Allah make it easy for him. Allah give him shifa, inshallah.
Amen.
And as I was attending to that, I got a call immediately. One of my family members, a girl, was stuck as well. So I attended to a breakdown. And when Muhammad Salim got hold of me, I actually just walked into the house.
Exactly for your time.
So, Maulana maaf for that. But, you know, it's rather weekends that get busy for us, you know, sometimes.
Gee. JazakAllah for your time. To listen to your phone in program, the car program, give us a call on the number 011-854-1548. 011-854-1548. The SMS number for tonight's program is 0825-80-8070. 0825-80-8070. Quite a few SMSs have come through, quite a bit of them regarding trade values and retail values. Let's start with the Honda Accord first SMS. The brother wants to know the Honda Accord 2-liter elegance automatic car. Yes, four cylinders. The model is 2014. My brother, it's a hell of a lot of money. The trade value is approximately 275,000 rands for that Honda Accord 2014.
But, Morana, brilliant vehicle, huh? Very, very nice vehicle. If you have driven one of those, you'll probably fall in love with them. They've got all the extras, the bells, the whistles, everything, and reliable, you know, fantastic ride, excellent braking system. You know, it's a genuine all-round excellent vehicle.
Lovely, Jazakallah. All right, you're paying for it 275,000 rand. That is the trade value. And yes, don't pay trade value. Just make mashallah, like we always say, with the dealers and maybe your friends who are in the business, and ask them what's the best price to pay. Call on the line. Line number 2, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ji, ma'am.
Ji, I'd like to know, you know, I've got the Polo diesel.
Ji.
The turbo doesn't kick in when you're putting off, you know, coming on a hill.
The turbo doesn't kick in only when you're coming off the hill. That turbo is not working all together.
Because as soon as you come into a climb,
it's flat. Yeah, the car is flat. Even when you sort of pulling off, and that you find that the power is rather
but,
low.
But like that, you moved beautifully all the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
She won't be moving well.
Yeah.
Obviously, maybe Appa's got a habit of not driving too quick around the built-up areas, but you'll notice that she generally has lacked in power. And unfortunately, with those vehicles, the turbo is a problem. And, you know, my personal preference on those vehicles is not... there are certain turbos on those vehicles. They go by serial number, which certain turbos are not repairable or are not, you know, you can't recondition them. But my personal preference on those particular vehicles is to replace the turbo. Unfortunately, they are a little bit expensive.
Yeah, how much will it cost?
Look, I last paid about 8,000 rand for a turbo on those vehicles. And it's 8,000 rand mostly because most of those turbos do come with the manifold included. So you cannot buy a loose turbo on that particular vehicle, from what I recall. And if you go to the agency, you're going to be looking at least about between 18 and 22,000 rand.
That's the only way I can have it sorted out.
Yeah, you'll have to replace the turbo, but you can get an aftermarket one, which is equally brilliant, and for half the price.
Okay, could you tell me who can I take it to?
Papa,
what you could do, Papa, is inshallah we have some telephone numbers. Maybe you could call after the program, inshallah we'll try and assist you.
Just let Mohammed Salim give Papa my number there. And we will help out, inshallah.
All right, then. Just hold the line.
All right.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Salaam.
All right, number to call is 8541548. SMS 0825808070. 0825808070. We're waiting for the calls as well as the SMSs. The question stating Abdul Haq doesn't say what car it is, but there is a bit of a noise when accelerating. When the car is first turned on, you can tell by the sound that something is up. And stepping on the petrol pedal, the car feels quite sluggish and makes a type of a hissing noise. What could be the problem?
See, this is one of two more than likely possibilities on a vehicle there. One is the hissing sort of screeching noise that would come out is if you have a loose fan belt or a faulty fan belt tensioner, which most of the vehicles today have a fan belt tensioner that is self-adjusting, spring-loaded. It will take up the tension on its own. The other sound that would be more appropriate, I think, for the lack of power, is you've got a vacuum leak either on your inlet manifold or your one of the air pipes have pulled off or have got a little hole in them, or maybe from the movement all the time it is cracked open, and with the result you're sucking in so much of air that the vehicle cannot cope. Actually with the amount of juice or petrol that's coming through. So with the result, what's happening is you're having a bit of sluggishness, and that sound is especially when you accelerate, the sound becomes more because your demand for air fuel mixture is more in the vehicle. So I suggest you look at all your vacuum hoses and pipes and stuff like that. You probably find one of those are out or they've perished or cracked or something like that.
All right, Jazakallah. Sister calls in the question she left with Brother Salim on the other side is that she wants to change petrol from Shell to Cecil the entire life. I think she's been filling up Shell. She wants to now change to Cecil. Will this damage the engine in any way?
No, not at all, Marana. Firstly, is it diesel or is it the petrol? That's the other question. Is it the up by the phone just now?
No, somebody else.
Oh, okay, somebody else. Diesel, I would say yes, most definitely. If you're changing, go to Cecil because you've got your 10 ppm. That is the lowest sulfur diesel you'll get currently. I've been using it on my vehicle. It's been phenomenal. It's been doing a wonderful job for me. I'm getting brilliant and excellent mileage out of the thing as well. And when it comes to the petrol, the fuel itself, there is nothing wrong with changing over from one fuel to the other. Obviously, as long as you're not mixing diesel and petrol. But yes, if you're changing over from petrol, even from 93 to 95, you can move over to the different octanes. You can move over to different brands. And lots of different feedback that we get from people is, you know, certain people said I'm getting more mileage out of Shell. Someone says more out of engine. I suppose for me it comes again maybe after you filled up you had a bit of a different route that you've driven or something like that. It's possible that you should you get a bit more kilometers out of you feel maybe a certain brand, but they generally should be all the same. And there's nothing wrong with moving over from one fuel to the other.
Right. Question coming through. It says from a sister, why does my car, chug? It says and sputter when I take off. Basically, I think jerking and moving when taking off.
Yeah.
Something in the gearbox. The fast thrust bearings.
Monana, there is quite a few things that could actually affect something like it. Obviously, we come firstly. I mean, I personally, when you say chug, when you're pulling off, splatter is more like a misfire kind of thing for me. It could be either from the fuel side or it could be from the electrical side. From the fuel side, the possibility exists that, you've got an injector that is actually leaking to a certain point. After you've switched the vehicle off, you have fuel dripping onto the piston, and when you start the vehicle up, you find that now the car is splattering because it's similar to myself getting up in the morning, you got to clear your throat before you start talking properly. It's a matter of clearing its throat sort of thing because of the excess fuel within the system, and it's having a little bit of a hassle burning that fuel out. The other possibilities are misfires, as far as your electrical components are concerned. As like today, all the vehicles have what we call a plug-on coil. We don't have like the older vehicles where you had a coil which is connected to the distributor and then was then connected to the plug wires individually, everything. So the distributor, everything has fallen away. You call them a distributorless ignition, which the coil fits directly onto the spark plug. You could be possibly having something there. The other thing is also if the vehicle is a little bit on the old side and you have a problem with your spark plug or your spark plug is oiled up or something like that, it'll take a while to burn that off. So especially initially when you're pulling off, you can find that you have this splatter, jerk, whatever. The other thing is, like you mentioned, coming down to a manual vehicle on the clutch side as well, if you have a clutch shudder, it almost feels like, the car hasn't got enough power. Even a worn clutch could even create it or make you feel more doubtful about the whole thing, because what happens is when the clutch is slipping, you're accelerating, but the movement of the car is not really, there. So, yeah, it could be on the clutch side. It could be also in the electrical side. It could be on the fuel side. There's quite a few things. I suggest the sister takes the car in to a technician that knows what's happening, and he can then do a correct diagnosis. Obviously, if it's a newish vehicle, we would like to say that, do a diagnostics. You got the onboard computer where you plug in the diagnostics, and that can give you the DTCs. The DTC is actually diagnostic trouble codes. So maybe that will give you a code and you can pick it up from there as well.
Okay, lovely. With regards to Abdul Haq, a few minutes ago you spoke about, low sulfur diesel. What is the advantages of using low sulfur diesel?
Low sulfur diesel, first of all, mainly, the actual research and everything that's gone into the low sulfur diesel is to be environmentally friendly. The Go Green today, we've got all the measurements of going green. The other thing that I did find as well in a bit of research and going through all these systems, it's rather less harsh on the components of the vehicle as well.
you know, you don't have such quick excessive wear and tear. The economy of the vehicle, the fuel economy, the performance of the vehicle also is improved drastically and dramatically. For example, if you look at sometimes you see a truck or a you know, one of the diesel vehicles driving ahead of you or whatever, and you find that he accelerates and you find this whole lot of black smoke coming out. You know, that's more than likely today because we don't have diesel pumps in as such. You know, it's a direct injection system. You get the smoke that's coming out, and you'll find that is due to dirty or poor quality diesel. So yes, the low sulfur 10 ppb diesel is a real winner for me, and I think for most motorists out there. It's actually brilliant. Look, if you can't get the 10 ppb, then the 50 ppb is available. But then you get the 100 pp, which most of the people use in the long distance hauling trucks and things like that, because they, you know, their components are rather more heavy duty and stuff like that. But yes, it does affect the wear and tear on the components of the engine to a certain extent. And yes, to a large extent, it does. I find that it does improve the economy of the vehicle and the performance of the vehicle as well.
How much will it cost to repair a steering rack? The brother says he was driving up a steep driveway and he hit his steering rack. Now what's happening is it's leaking. Is there something he wants to know that can be easily fixed?
Look, well, obviously we've got to look at the thing and do an assessment on it. But 9 out of 10 times, if you have hit the actual casing of the steering rack itself, if you've hit the casing and damaged the casing, then the casing is more than likely cracked. And what I would say is, please don't repair, don't weld, replace. If it is a pipe or something like that you've maybe hit somewhere and the pipe has come off or sheared a little bit, it's made a little hole in the pipe, oh yes, go and have the pipe replaced. You have a pipe made up, it's a lot cheaper to make a pipe up. You have them made up by many of these companies that do them, the hydraulic companies. But if the steering rack itself has got a dent and a crack within its on the casing itself, then I would suggest please don't repair, replace that, because it could be very, very detrimental, dangerous to you. Because if a steering component has a crack on it, eventually with all the vibration and the movement of the vehicle, as well as going all those over the speed bumps and the beautiful roads we have in our country, that could be very, very dangerous. Actually, it could be fatal.
Abdul Haq, question coming through. It states that regarding a Toyota Corolla, very unlikely of a Toyota Corolla, the 1995 models, those were really very solid, strong cars, you know. The brother says it won't start. He's changed the distributor, the fuel filter, the fuel pump. The timing's fine. The car cranks, but it just won't start.
Okay, the car won't start. He says he's replaced the distributor.
Yeah.
Distributor. All right. Because typically on those vehicles, what we did find is, we don't replace the distributor, but the coil in the distributor itself. Has he tried a new distributor, or has he tried a second-hand distributor? That's the other question we've got to ask. Obviously, unfortunately, it's an SMS. The other thing is, you know, the car cranks but doesn't start. All right, basic. Go back totally, completely to basic. Go and have a look at your fuel pressure, first of all, if you're having fuel coming through. Did he say it's carburetor or fuel injection, Marana?
Yeah, I think it's a fuel injection. 95 is a fuel injection, 1.6G.
The 1.6. All right, okay. Then I would suggest you have a look at the fuel pressure first, if the issue coming through, and then you go obviously onto the spark side of it. Go and have a look and check if there is spark on that on the spark plugs itself, or rather on the plug wires on there. Have a look at that, check it out. If you've got spark and if you've got fuel, then the vehicle should be starting. But then if it doesn't start in those circumstances, then I would suggest you do a compression test to see if there is enough compression in the engine itself. If there is enough compression, then obviously we've got to do a little further diagnosis or diagnostics on that particular vehicle and see why it just doesn't want to start up. The other thing is, does the brother, look, unfortunately, as you say, again, it's an SMS question. Does he have some sort of alarm immobilizer system in the vehicle? Because, yes, those could also be troublesome and create a bit of an issue. So, you know, I had somebody about 3 weeks ago who had also a 160i, the old CAS 160i, and the vehicle wouldn't start, and he had an alarm fitted about, I say, a week or a couple of days before that, and the man was stuck outside there, and we found that at the end of the day, it was the alarm system that he had fitted in. The new alarm system was faulty, and yes, you know, he got the guy out, and he came and had a look, and he redid this alarm thing, and alhamdulillah, the car started. So it's very, very possible that there is something faulty also with the alarm.
Jazakumullah. Abdul-Haq, the brother's got a 2004 Jetta. The car's been showing him check engine light for a few weeks. The mechanic changed, he doesn't know what, but a small pipe in the air compression system. And he says after it drove about 30 kilos, it came back on, and the car also doesn't accelerate. But instead, what happens is that the speed decreases once he picks up speed on the highway. What could be the problem?
Morana, you know, on the Jetta 5, you see that?
2004 is a Jetta 4, I think.
Jetta 4, that's not a Jetta 5, yeah. All right, the Jetta 4 itself, on the inlet manifold, you had a little valve on the vacuum side of it. Is that valve for any reason blocked up? Or pipe perished or something like that, then typically that vehicle would do something like that. That's from the little experience I have on those particular vehicles. 9 out of 10 times I found that the actual breathing valve there was a bit of a problem, and with the result, the car wasn't performing well. So it's not necessarily only the pipe that you need to replace. You must look at the valves and also the routing of the pipes themselves, that they are connected in the correct order. So I would suggest you see somebody who knows something about VW, because I've had somebody about 2 or 3 weeks ago as well with a similar sort of setup on his Golf, and once we put the vacuum hoses in the correct positions, the car started performing much better, and he was quite happy with it.
Okay, lovely. Jazakumullah. Abdul-Haq, the brother's got a Nissan Maxima. It's a 3-litre G, the car. He wants to know regarding a crankshaft sensor, what would it cost him?
First of all, Maxima, tell him sell it and buy a car. Because I've got a Maxima as well I'm sitting with. Unfortunately, we having difficulty picking up the problem on this vehicle. While driving, it just switches off and it wouldn't start, and immediately it would start again. So the problem is not staying there. Crank sensor on those things, I must actually make sure that vehicle actually does take a crank sensor. If they do take up a crank sensor, then they're not that expensive. But unfortunately, now that the vehicles are going a bit old, you don't get them any pirate sort of in a market or aftermarket thing. You unfortunately have to go to the agents. And I noticed with the Nissan, especially I've done on the Nissan X-Trails, on the Nissan Almeras, on the Primeras as well, is those sensors, you've got to change them in tandem. You get one for the camshaft and one you get for the crankshaft. And those should be replaced in tandem. And they do come as one sort of, in one box. They come, two components come separately in one box. And yes, I have replaced them. At the agents also, they weren't too expensive for the Primeras and that. But as far as the Maxima is concerned, it's going to be rather difficult because it's an oldish vehicle. And there are not too many spares readily available for those vehicles.
Okay, lovely. SMS question, BMW, the 118i automatic, it's the E87s. 2007 model, my brother, it's about 70,000 rands. But like we always say, make mashallah with somebody who knows more about these cars, but plus minus 70,000 rands, okay?
Gee, Marana, the other thing we must specify, I think, is, giving the plus minus idea of what the resale or trade value of the vehicle is also taking into account what the condition of the vehicle is.
Mm.
You know, you can't just say, you know, I've got a 2007 318i and, this is, what's the mileage on the vehicle is very, very important. What the vehicle actually looks like, you know, does it look in a good condition or is it in a fair condition or is it in an excellent condition? Also, that would affect directly affect the pricing of the vehicle itself as well, out there on the market. Because if you're going to show a guy a car with a couple of scratches and dents, he's obviously going to bring you down on your price.
Okay, Jazakumullah. The question stating of the Haq regarding the Dodge, how the brother wants to buy a Dodge?
I think he must dodge the Dodge, Malana.
Mm.
He must dodge the Dodge. because unfortunately, you know, it's a rather expensive vehicle to maintain. Not to say anything wrong, but I've never been a fan of the American vehicles. They are rather big, bulky, and you know, designed differently. The other thing that I do find a problem as far as that is concerned is, as, you know, your American vehicles, you're not getting parts easily available, firstly. Secondly, they are rather ridiculously priced as well. And there are not so many agents out there. If you look up, you know, for Dodge and Chrysler, there's not so many, how can I say, repair centers or service centers for those particular vehicles. So I would exercise caution if I look at a Dodge.
Okay. Mazda 2, my brother doesn't say what model is it. I would say pay about, he says the kilo is about 180,000 rand, sorry, 880,000 kilos. A white in color, the car is in excellent condition. My brother pay about, he said they want 50 grand. I think if it is clean, not really sprayed, good condition, service history, 50 grand definitely is a buy for a Mazda 2.
Exactly. Like we always say every week, brother, those vehicles are underrated. They are very, very nice vehicles. But like you said, provided in a good condition.
Fiesta 1.6i Trend 3-door, the brother says. It's red in color, also very good condition. He wants to purchase one. He says somebody said, somebody told him 59 grand. My brother, I think 59 is way out. I don't know.
Definitely.
Just check with somebody. But I think the trade value is about 42, 43, maybe 45. And I think a safe price to pay is about 40,000 rands. 42,000 rands is safe to pay.
See, Mulana, unfortunately, the Ford Fiesta themselves are not really holding much price, you know. Depends also which type of engine it's got. And, you know, it's a little vehicle that I wouldn't say it's troublesome, but, you know, there aren't too many happy campers out there.
Okay. The question states, doesn't say what car, it just states it's a Kia 2011 model. The brake lights keep going on. What could be the problem?
Brake lights as in a brake warning light or the brake lights at the back of the vehicle?
The brake warning lights.
Brake warning lights. Alright, obviously it depends on the brake pads, how much of wear he has on the brake pads. And the other thing is I noticed that a lot of times people tend to say, I'm going to have my brakes checked. All that happens is the guy takes out one wheel, and remember something, not all the wheels are having sensors on them, and on the side where there's no sensor, it might look like the brake pad is fine, and obviously on the other side, the brake pad is rather excessively worn, so the brake light will come on, or otherwise, what you then have is a problem with the sensor itself. What happens there is if the wiring for the sensor is moved out of position or, you know, not routed so well, then you will find that it's probably touching somewhere, and every time it touches, it creates an earth and completes the circuit. With the result, your warning lights are flashing for your brakes itself. But if it's the brake light itself at the back, you know, I'm just adding this on, Monona. If the brake at the back, the brake lights are not working at the back, then you know, or they're working intermittently on their own, then you probably have a faulty switch at the brake pedal. Which we do find from time to time on not only the Kias, but on a good few vehicles.
Number to call for the program, we have limited time. Give us a call on 011-854-1548, SMS 0825-80870. Line number 4, we have a call. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh. Ji, my brother.
Ji, just on the brake light issue also, it could be that sometimes some cars have sensors on the brake fluid level. So the brake fluid level could be low, so the guys also need to check that the brake fluid is sufficient.
Exactly, my brother. Yes, it could be the brake fluid levels as well. Something as small as this, the brake fluid.
Jazakallah for the brother.
Jazakallah, my brother. You take care, okay? Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Kia Sportage, 2001 model Kia Sportage. It's a four-cylinder. How are the Kia Sportages, Abul Haq?
More very, very nice vehicles, eh? I see there's quite a demand for it on the used car market as well. And I see a lot of people enjoying these vehicles. In fact, the new Sportage is a brilliant vehicle. You know, I've actually had the opportunity to drive one, and you know, it drives like a dream. Fantastic vehicle. Fantastic.
Lovely cars. What about the Suzuki Grand Vitaras?
Suzuki Grand Vitara, not too much of sort of experience on those particular vehicles, Molana. But the little I read up.
and the few that I know, the guys are very, very happy with those vehicles. In fact, somebody phoned me up in the course of last week, and you know, we had a bit of a discussion regarding the Suzuki, and they were very, very impressed with the Suzuki. So it sounds like it's a good vehicle. I think we should look more into that, or maybe we should get one of the guys from Suzuki to come out and give us a bit of a rundown on these particular vehicles.
Okay. Well, question.
Let me add on something here. The brother called in, alhamdulillah, valid point there with the brake light, you know, brake warning light coming on. I just want to clear something. Typically on the newer vehicles, if your brake pads are gone, it will tell you brake linings, or it will put a orange light on the instrument cluster. All right? If the red light goes on, then 9 out of 10 times that is your brake fluid level. Unfortunately, I did not explain that also, but, you know, especially your older vehicles, all of them, if your handbrake light doesn't go off, when you put your handbrake down and the handbrake light remains on, that sensor and the brake fluid level sensor are on one circuit. So if your brake fluid level is low, then you will get the red handbrake light coming on.
Okay, Jazakumullah. We continue, inshallah. The SMS again is 0825808070. The question coming through, Abdul Haq, that where is the map sensor located?
On which vehicle?
I didn't say which vehicle.
Yeah, you see, map sensors are located normally close to your onboard computer, or you got them in the engine compartment. Different vehicles, different manufacturers. I mean, you know, for example, I recall the Honda map sensor being located, especially on the Lux lines and things like that. That was located at the left footwell where your actual onboard computer was, and that you know, map sensor was located there. So different manufacturers, different vehicles, different sort of how can I say, wiring and routing of things, like you know, different manufacturers' designs. So they do definitely locate them in different sort of positions, but I wouldn't mess around with something like that.
I have a call for the SMSA. It's 1999 model. My battery seems to be getting flat every day, few days. I change batteries like every 6 months. Is it the alternator not charging?
Well, it could be a couple of things there. Number one is, if the alternator is not charging, then why do you change batteries every 6 months? I mean, because the battery doesn't have a six-month guarantee. The batteries nowadays especially have a two-year guarantee. And the guy who's selling you a battery, is he selling you a cheap second-hand battery, or are you buying a cheap second-hand battery or something like that? Then you could be buying 40 batteries, first of all. I mean, because I asked myself the question, if you're changing batteries every 6 months, then the guy who's selling you the new battery should be fed up of you, and he should be telling you there's something wrong with your vehicle. Gee, it's possible that the alternator is not doing a proper charge, but, you know, 6 months, no, I don't think so. You know, there's an outside possibility. More, it would be something, like I said, firstly, if the battery is faulty, yes. Otherwise, you could be having a short in the system where one or other component is actually drawing current out of the battery while the vehicle is switched off. So you need to take it to an auto electrician, let him have a look at the vehicle and see if there is any current draw on the vehicle. If there is no current draw on the vehicle and the alternator is charging fine, then I think your battery supplier is faulty.
Toyota RAV4, the first ones that came down, the brother says he wants to buy them. Are there parts readily available? It's about a 1997 model. Very cute cars indeed. And he says they want 35. 35 is the definite buy, my brother. But the kilo is also quite low. But what about parts for these cars, Toyota RAV4?
Yeah, alhamdulillah, I would say they sort of quite easily available. Nice vehicle, very, very nice vehicle. I wouldn't mind buying one of those for myself as well. The only thing is I was a bit uncomfortable with the automatics in those particular vehicles. The manuals were brilliant. Not to say there was anything wrong, but I have just a personal opinion and a personal sort of experience that I was not too happy with the automatic on those vehicles. But, yeah, very, very nice vehicles. You can enjoy them. You can really enjoy them.
Okay. Lovely. Jazakumullah. It's 12:30 minutes to 8 o'clock. Limited time, inshallah. Abdul Haq, what's the difference between two-stroke and four-stroke motors?
All right. That's very, very simple, Moran. I think you got a boat as well. All those guys. Your two-stroke motor is where you got to actually put in the oil into the fuel, so it lubricates the engine while it's actually burning the fuel as well. So they tend to smoke, like your motorbikes, are, you know, you get two-stroke motorbikes as well. Four-stroke engine are generally an engine
you know, which you know, your cycle as well. You know, you've got you know, it's just eluding me now, the four different strokes on on the engine, which is a very, very basic thing. But yeah, it's generally self lubricated, and it's got four different strokes to complete one cycle. I'm just trying to think of, you know, you've got the inlet, you've got the exhaust. I'm just blank on that. Right now I'm blank on that.
Okay.
I can't believe it. You know, that's the first thing you do when you start as a motor mechanic. Alhamdulillah, I did that about 31 years ago. But yeah, I'm just forgetting how the cycle is now. I'm just going totally blank on that. Ma, sorry about that.
No, it's fine. Jazakallah. The brother wants to know, when did the first Nissan Qashqai come out? My brother, I think it was 2008, 2009. If I'm incorrect, can somebody just recall, inshallah, and send me an SMS? And yes, he wants to know, he thinks it's a 2008. Yes, I think the first Nissan Qashqai came out in 2008. And the trade value on that one is about 100 and somewhat, 110, 115,000 rands.
So, but we can stir up the pot a little bit, you know, Molana, by saying that, you know, 110 on that, you're paying a little too much, I would have thought. You know, I don't say they're not nice vehicles, they're nice vehicles, everything. A little bit underrated as well, but I don't know what's the popularity of that vehicle. I'm sure one of my good friends, Feroz, is listening to me right now. Feroz, if you want to hit me, you're more than welcome to give me a smack.
I'm not going to hit you, I'm going to give you one of gun club. Next question, Nissan Tida 1.6, Vizia, lovely little cars, very, very nice cars.
Very popular, Molana.
Very popular, you know, really light on fuel, is easy to maintain. And the brother wants to know, 2009 model, the guy wants 48,000 rands. It's just got 130,000 on the clock, original full service history for 48 grand, 2009 model. It's a definite buy, I think, inshallah, my brother.
Definitely.
I think you should
very,
take
very
it.
Very popular vehicle. And what happens is, you know, I tell a lot of guys, if you're not happy with that vehicle, you can sell it very quickly as well.
Very quickly, G. Nissan Almera as well, the brother says it's about a 2000 model, yes. He wants to buy one for 35 grand, 220,000 kilos on the clock. Yes, I think my brother, it is a buy.
Not too bad.
Not too bad, G.
Not too bad.
Very, very strong cars, lovely little cars as well. But also underrated, Abdul Haq.
G. No, look, they're nice vehicles. The only thing, Mona, I find with the... but look, it's across the board. If you look at Nissan, you look at Toyota, you look at all of them, Honda, the whole lot of them. You know, when it comes to these ignition coils, where the pencil coils, or like we said, you know, they fit onto the spark plug, obviously the electrical components, they do give hassles, but all of them are rather on the expensive side, so, yeah.
Okay. Let's take the other question. The Abdul Haq, transmission oil, E46 station wagon BMW. The brother says that he was told transmission oil is low, and you know, he was told by somebody that he cannot do it himself. They have to go to somebody, and I think through some machinery will put in the transmission oil. Is this correct?
Most definitely. On the automatic transmissions, you cannot do. It's not a do-it-yourself to put in transmission oil in those vehicles. Even the Mercs now, you know, most of the vehicles are going that way. Obviously, they're trying to cut out, you know, the man on the street that's trying to do the job himself. But the thing is, if the transmission oil is low, because remember something, transmission oil is not something that's consumable. So it's not going to get finished unless, of course, you have a leak on the vehicle.
Yeah.
So I would suggest you have a look at the leak first. But the thing is, you're not going to sort that leak out yourself. So, yeah, just take it to somebody who knows what they're doing, how much oil to put in, and, you know, how to check the oil and how to actually put the correct amount of oil in that vehicle. I would suggest take it to somebody who knows what they're talking about and doing, and repair the oil leak before you top up the oil. Don't just top up the oil, because eventually, you know, the leak becomes worse, and a transmission today to recondition is rather expensive.
Okay. And to take it to the mechanic, I think the oil has leaked on. Now, to take it to the mechanic, is it safe, Abdul Haq?
Look,
it's approximately, say, 8 kilos driving. Will that be safe?
Approximately 8 kilometers. Obviously, when you put the vehicle in drive, does it drive?
Yes, it does drive.
Yeah, then I would suggest you can go slowly. It's fine, not a problem. But if you put it into drive and nothing happens, or if you put it into reverse and it doesn't reverse but it goes forward, then I would suggest you don't drive it.
Yeah. All right. Let's take our last final question for tonight. The brother says, air conditioner works properly, cold air, and then all of a sudden it'll just quit and blow hot air, and eventually it'll start working again properly and repeat itself again. So what could be the problem that happened?
See, Morana, there's a couple of things there that could affect the air conditioning system. One is, obviously, if there is low gas in it. If there is low gas in, then the aircon compressor itself might just, you know, work intermittently. Then you have a pressure switch on the system. If the pressure is incorrect also, it will tend to cut in and cut out as it, you know, as it operates. So, most of these vehicles that have these sophisticated aircon systems, you can now do diagnosis on with a diagnostic machine. So I would suggest go and check it out. See first. Don't just go put gas into the system because you might be wasting your money. First go and have it properly diagnosed before putting in gas into the system.
Al-Hakma, brother, Jazakumullah, last SMS.
Jimalana.
And this one is with regards to trade values. The brother says he wants to buy a 320i E90 2007 model. He says they want 60,000 rands. If the mileage is good, my brother, I think it's a good buy. 60,000 rands. Trade is about 72,000-73,000 rands. 7:55 p.m. Abdul Haq, Jazakallah for the lovely program.
Jazakallah.
And yes, inshallah, have a lovely week.
Jazakallah to you. Jazakallah to all the callers. And inshallah, you guys have a lovely weekend, inshallah. And we request special dua. Jazakumullahu khairan. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.